Hi, this is Giuseppe.
Hi, this is Anthony, and you're listening to For the Love of Sophia,
a philosophy podcast brought to you by the Public Philosophy Project.
If you have any questions or suggestions, feel free to email us at publicphilproject@gmail.com. Enjoy the ride. Okay, hello guys.
Hello, it's been a while.
Welcome home.
Welcome. So, first of all, Anthony, how are you?
I'm okay-ish.
Doing better.
So I was telling you, for the folks back home, what happened was I ruptured my eardrum. It's not exciting. I blew my nose, mundanely. And once I did that, it did the pop thing where it gets muffled. And it never went back. And I had like blood coming out of my ear. And and they eventually had to suck it out. But like the liquid dripped in my eye. And then I had pink eye from the infection or whatever in my ear. And so I've been going back and forth between doctors. And my hearing still isn't right. And it healed with liquid behind it. And I may need to get a tube like a baby.
That's okay. You're like Benjamin Button, you're going back to the baby stage. He was choking off the car.
Funny enough, that was me and Claire's first date movie.
Really?
Oh, yeah. 17 years old. I took her to Wendy's, and we saw Benjamin Button.
Okay, I guess it was a cool movie. I don't remember seeing. Did I see
that's one of the new movies that I thought was like actually good.
New movies? New.
It was Brad Pitt. He's always good.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything bad, Brad Pitt.
With Brad Pitt?
Anything terrible.
Yeah, nothing comes to mind.
Oh, yeah. One, I didn't finish, went through like the first 30 minutes of the movie.
What is that?
Killing Me Softly.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, good for you.
Okay. But now we're back. It's been too long.
Yeah, it's been too long. Some of you have asked me in person, have been worried about us. We're back.
We're back.
We didn't split the band.
Falling apart. And this is episode 114.
114, okay.
Sounds like a nice number.
It's a nice number. 115 next.
115 next.
That's cool.
And today. We're going to talk about something that we've indirectly touched upon.
Probably.
Not directly. And it'll be fun because it connects to everything. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of dichotomy, push and pull between tradition and novelty.
Yeah. I don't know which direction we're going to go with this, but I see that that this could be truly interesting. And I also think that it is very possible that we might not see eye to eye when it comes to this kind of stuff, I guess. Uh-oh. If I had to guess, but it's just a guess, because then, you know, I always think that, and then we end up agreeing most of the time about stuff that we talk about.
So we shall see. I think probably we'll have a general seeing eye to eye with one person leaning slightly one way, maybe, and the other person leaning slightly the other way. Yeah. But I think both of us are much closer than we would be to people who are not us.
Yeah, most likely.
Okay.
So, first question. I was thinking about this while I was driving here. By the way, we are in Anthony's new office, right?
That's right. Welcome.
You cannot see it, but it's a nice office, I can say.
It's empty bookshelf. It looks like North Korea. Like it's just set up to look like an office, but it's not.
Yeah, I suspect it didn't exist 30 minutes ago before I came here.
That's right.
Anthony put it together. No, but it's a nice office, and it seems like that for the time being, this might be the place where we do it when we meet.
I think so.
Because, you know, we're trying to, you know, Anthony's health issues have given us, how can we call it, kind of a wake-up call, and we're deciding to do this to establish a day when we actually meet, right? And then, you know, talk to each other and be like, hey, let's do it next week, let's do it the other week. And then we're just going to be like, no, there's a mandatory podcast meeting once a month when we do what we need to do.
So I think what you're doing is airing our dirty laundry on the air, yes. Like we're a couple at therapy.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I feel like I'm being attacked.
No. I'm responsible for this too, right? But yeah, we need to do that because otherwise we're going to find ourselves in this position ever again. But I'm saying that this is the place where we're going to do
it. This is the place.
That's what I'm saying.
We got the books. We got the PPP stuff. We'll be good. So we're talking about where do we start, right? Because I guess why people might be asking, why did I say tradition and novelty? And I guess specifically you could say old versus new is the more general concept. Mm-hmm. And I just chose words that are more, let's say...
Traditional.
I was going to say... potentially rich in their meaning and connection. And I guess we could start by asking, what is tradition? Like, what do you think of when you hear this word? What do you think the average person would think of when they hear it?
Before I answer that, I'm thinking, you said the right thing, right? I think that there is a richer, how can we call it? History.
Sure.
There's the word tradition has a connotation that I think overall is what can we say, better, nicer than the word old. Old seems to be nowadays synonymous with obsolete, right? While with tradition, I feel maybe that goes in the meaning of it. There is an attachment that it's different. There is an emotional attachment. Mm. There is a hue, we can say, that characterizes that. That is a positive one, maybe. Because everybody loves traditions. Like Christmas time, everybody's their tradition.
That's true.
Their own tradition. But I suspect that we're thinking of something a little extra that goes beyond.
The first thing you think of is like a holiday, though.
Something like that. Yeah, I think that that will be the layman.
I think they would think of putting up the Christmas tree, like you're saying. Or maybe they'll think of, oh, our family has a tradition. Mm-hmm. Like once a year we do this thing and we've been doing it for however long. They could be small. They could be big. We think of traditions that happen, I don't know, like in baseball it's traditional for someone to throw the opening pitch.
And correct.
The rituals, would we say, activities that we perform periodically that's for a specific reason because they seem to hold some kind of meaning, mm-hmm. and the meaning has something to do with why we hold on to it.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, to get Emil in the thick of things, right? One of the things that characterizes traditions is the fact that they come from the past, of course, but they are cyclical, right? They keep on coming. There is not something historical, quote unquote, that it's gone and once and for all. They keep on bringing this meaning back, and we keep on maybe ritually performing those traditions every so often, whatever they are. Otherwise, they're not traditions, right? Otherwise, they're the things that we used to do.
That's a good point. So they're not merely the past and that are now in the past forever and always, right? Mm-hmm. They're things in the past that we carry with us into the present and that we think about looking towards the future. And some people have a really broad view of this. Like mm-hmm. you can have a view where it's specific ritual acts, or if you're someone like Gadamer, he seems to think that everything we do is carrying tradition forth mm-hmm. because everything we do comes from language, and language, he says, is intrinsically traditional.
Yeah, there's this idea that you're always... Not the language that Gadamer uses, right? You're always kind of embedded in the past, right? You're always carrying this tradition. Every act that you make mm-hmm. Is a traditional act, right? Because you are performing something that you're carrying from somewhere else. There's never complete novelty, right? That doesn't exist, sort of.
Yeah, it's kind of like your mode of being is always already historically affected. Like he has this long German word that translates as historically affected consciousness. Mm-hmm. And it's like Geschichtsbewusstsein, like some very like long thing. And he says that's always already, right? You can't remove yourself from the tradition because all of our means of not only communicating but thinking come from historical categories that are, as you're saying, cyclical.
Yeah, and Nietzsche says something similar in, when he talks about history, right? And at the very beginning of the, it's one of the untimely conservation?
Meditations?
Maybe? I don't know. I forgot the translation.
All these people have titles that sound the same, so I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, the essay that's called On the Advantage and Disadvantage of History for Life, at the beginning he says, like, consider the herd. And, you know, it says to look at cows, and the cows are grazing there, and they seem to have no problem and no issues because they go about their day. And the human is, like, almost envious of them. And we're envious of them because we have those issues and we have those problems and we are kind of carrying the load of the past with us, right?
Hmm.
The animals are ahistorical, right?
Wow, yeah.
Historical, while human beings are by definition historical beings and they're carrying with them the weight of the tradition from where they come from, right? Which is an interesting concept.
No, totally. And I was talking about something similar in class today.
Well,
and a dangerous one, you would say. Yeah, I feel like a lot, basically everything we'll say from this point on depends on what view of tradition and history we take. Because one view, which I'll call the conventional view, loosely speaking, is the thing where we could or could not be doing tradition, right? Like it's a choice to carry them forth or not. And the second view is the more, let's call it radical view, the more discipline-specific view in like hermeneutics that you're always in tradition and you can't escape it.
Yeah.
And I think for our purposes, we maybe stick to the first one.
So the choice one?
Because otherwise there is no novel. There's no tradition versus novelty. It's just all tradition,
true,
right?
True, true.
So I think when we're talking about tradition definitionally for now,
mm-hmm.
as long as we can, we mean the more conventional idea of voluntarily or at least semi-voluntarily chosen ways of thinking and behaving where you carry forth things from the past and into the future repeatedly.
And I think that, you know, we can even make a distinction here, right? The thing of which Gadamer is talking about, or even Nietzsche, right? Those are kind of the unconscious stuff that are there all the time, right? Well, the one that we want to talk about is the things that we actually do by choice and that we're conscious about, right?
Good point.
So I think that is the benign version of tradition, right? The fact that we do, again, everybody loves tradition. And I think that very few people will tell you that they're bad and they do anything wrong to you. There's nothing wrong with them, right? Everyone is his own. As long as everybody can have their own, everybody's going to be okay with it. But then there's like a more, I don't know, not necessarily malicious, but a more nuanced and maybe controversial version of this idea of tradition that has to do with the word traditional rather than the word tradition in itself.
Okay.
That in my mind evokes things like how can we call it? It pairs with being like conservative about certain stuff or being reactionary also when it comes to certain things.
And it's interesting to say there's the relation to those things because in a way, I say, those are opposites. Right? Because one of them is like the thing is already here and I'm keeping it. And one is the thing is no longer here and now I'm reacting to something.
Yeah.
But generally, of course, because to conserve means there is something you're conserving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing you're conserving is the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And the reactionary thing is the fear of losing that, and then therefore I reaffirm it and I react to this fear of losing it and reaffirm the whatever thing that I'm losing by employing all those traditions and those rituals. Again, mm-hmm. I think the two things go together a lot. Mm. But that's what I'm thinking. I think that we have, at least there's this dichotomy, the nice thing that everybody will agree with, and the other one instead might be a little bit more controversial, because some people might say that the second one that I spoke of, the one that's to do with being traditional, is not necessarily a good thing at all times.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that's true. The second one has a more of a negative connotation, because I think in general it sounds like old, right? You had mentioned in the beginning old has a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. I think it relates to that, and this actually came up in our club meeting today because we were talking about AI ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And what is, let's say, morally acceptable, responsible ways of using technology. And so we had this conversation about, like, should we react negatively against this thing, or should we react positively, or should we kind of be somewhere in between? And if so, like, what do we do, right? And I feel like this is the theme for all of Western civilization, right?
Pretty much.
And I made the Aristotle joke. Like, you should meet this guy named Aristotle. But, you know, we were talking, me and you have talked a lot about Byung-Chul Han, right? A few years ago wrote The Disappearance of Ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if talking about some of these characteristics of ritual that he identifies will help anchor us and allow us to see kind of multiple sides of it, right? For those who are against it, they'll be able to see things that they may consider to be positive, and things that are for it may be able to consider potential negatives.
Mm-hmm. What are you thinking specifically there?
Well, the thesis of the book, his starting point, is this idea that tradition is something like a necessary condition for community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of having community without communication.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I know you hear that. Sounds like they're on spring break. This is outside my window. They're rowdy. And he says, today what you see is kind of the inversion of the tradition model, where instead of having community without communication, what we have is communication without community.
Mm-hmm.
And what he means by that, in part, is that traditions are marked by rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And rituals are ways of acting that are symbolic, where you do a thing or you write a thing, and there's not a literal transference of information in a kind of denotative sense, but it's almost like I see things as indicating more than what they are. So an mm-hmm. example of a symbol might be when I look at the flag,
mm-hmm.
right? Or if I look at a tombstone mm-hmm. in a cemetery. Or he talks about the ancient version of friendship bracelets, where like you would break things in two and give it to another person, and you'd always kind of like be close to each other's hearts and things like that. And this was a way of connecting people that was based on the act itself rather than specifically, you know, talking with or writing mm-hmm. to one another.
Yeah.
So it seems like traditions do that. They're ways of bringing people together that aren't explicit jibber jabber, whether it's us opening presents, us decorating the tree, you know, dressing up for Halloween, or even playing music on Sunday nights when we're making dinner. So there are all these acts that we do that mean more than what they are on a bare bones level, I think.
Definitely. And some of them are innocuous, again, or they bring community together. And I guess they're necessary, right? There's a level in which these things are necessary, not just for the individual, but for society in general, right?
Yeah, and that's what he chooses to focus on.
There is no society without tradition, right? There is no society without rituals, because otherwise we never get together, right? We never do things without talking. Everything remains just chatter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering though if there is a way in which this the same exact thing can be problematic in a sense, right? Because, and I think this is, and it's inevitable, and I I would say that some people find this problematic. I'm not sure it is in itself, because I think it's like almost ontologically embedded into this thing, which is forms that traditions bring with them necessarily forms of exclusion, right?
Absolutely.
They have to. Otherwise, there is no tradition, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just something that everybody does that is nothing special. And the tradition is something that only that you do only with the people that are part of the group with which you perform the tradition slash the ritual, right? Mm-hmm. If your tradition is that you do the Christmas tree on December 1st and you do it with your family, with your immediate family, and you need to squirt each other with... with what is it called? With whipped cream. Because that's what you do.
Do you guys do that? That's cute.
That's my daughter thing. I did it once when they were little just to have fun with them. And that has become like my daughter's like, Dad, we need to do the Christmas tree. Buy the whipped cream.
That's so beautiful.
And I am like the one that squirts everybody and then everybody gets mad at me and they chase me. So, yeah. But that's the thing. But you do that just with your immediate family, right? If one time when we are doing this, there's somebody else there, of course, we're not going to squirt this thing because people would think that we're weird and people also don't want to be squirted with whipped cream, right? But I think this is, as silly as this is also true of all of the rituals, right? Where people, there are within the ritual, part of the in-group, understand, don't find that thing weird, and they're able to carry meanings if and only if there is no stranger in there. Because the moment there is a stranger, the moment there is somebody that's part of another group, so the out group, if you want, right? Then the whole thing looks different. It gets disrupted, right? It looks strange sometimes.
In multiple ways. Yeah, that's a good point, because it's like the meaning only exists intersubjectively relative to that in-group.
Mm-hmm.
I like the phrase you said, from the outside, it looks weird.
Yeah.
Because it's like you have a culture.
Yeah.
And cultural practices only make sense and look normal within that culture,
exactly.
Right? So some objective alien god figure outsider comes to you and they're like, what are you doing? You squirt each other with whipped cream?
What?
Whereas for you, you're like, no, this makes perfect sense. It's coherent within this like framework we have, right?
Yeah.
And then also, not only would they think it looks weird, but it would screw with the meaning you derive from
exactly.
the ritual, right? It's like, I think every year for Halloween, we always go on a hayride at one point with my one friend, Jamie. And like we've been going with her for years, right? Mm-hmm. And so even if I don't talk to her for a lot of the year, I'm always like, all right, we got to do this thing.
Ready.
And because if we didn't do it with her, or we brought in someone different, it would feel weird because that's not what the thing is supposed to be.
Correct.
So you find meaning in the exclusionary limits because without it, there's no thing.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how important this is to the thing in itself, right? Because the fact that meaning can appear only and reappear the same way only if nobody else is there to disrupt it, I think it says something about the meaning itself, about meaning itself, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's something that is not embedded in the thing itself, but it is rather that something that comes out of the interaction between the individual, the subjects, whatever you want to call it, involved in the thing. Even though the thing is the fundamental thing that makes the tradition, right? It's interesting because the thing itself, going to the air ride, squirting people with whipped cream, even the dog, loves it, of course.
Poor Penny. Oh, no, she loves it?
She loves it. Oh,
that's
good.
She
starts licking everything that has whipped cream. We actually find where the whipped cream end up going because we see Penny licking it. But I was saying, so the thing in itself is the tradition. And yet, there is no meaning in it unless there's a specific set of individuals that are in there. And there is, some people can come in and out of it, I guess. I should say some people can come in it, maybe under some special circumstances.
Yep.
But the moment somebody is in it, the moment that somebody's not there anymore, I think that the tradition itself is not carrying the same meaning anymore.
It dies.
Or it changes, I would say.
Mm.
I'm thinking, let's say, an example, right? Let's say right now when you put the tree together, it's you, Claire, and Rosie, I'm assuming, right? And there's certain things that you do, right? All those things. Let's say you have another kid.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the other kid is going to be part of this tradition, is going to get into this tradition, and everything's going to stay the same, whatever it is. Nothing is going to change. Let's think of something else, because I don't want to use that tradition. I don't want to say anything bad about what we do. Let's say there's a tradition that every Sunday afternoon, you go to grandma's house to have dinner.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and it's always you, Uncle Joey, and your family, and whatever it is. And there's grandma and grandpa's house, whatever it is. Eventually, grandma or grandpa are gone. And let's say there's somebody that inherits the house and he wants to keep the tradition going. So we all still go there and have lunch in mm-hmm. there, even if grandpa is still alive, but grandma is not there anymore. Well, that thing, even if you're doing it, the tradition is still there. The act is still there. Even if you faithfully do it every Sunday, the act is still there. Well, the tradition has changed because all of a sudden, maybe, that tradition becomes about remembering grandma, right? That's a different tradition.
Hmm.
He changes meaning because of the fact that the people that are present, because one of the people that was present in that tradition has exited, but somehow has left the mark in there,
it's
too.
It's like a trace.
There's a trace.
Yeah.
That's very Derrida.
Yeah.
There's a trace.
I like some of it.
But I don't know if it just makes sense at all.
It makes perfect sense. I think what you're saying is that there's a certain amount of malleability
mm-hmm.
or wiggle room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like, this isn't a good analogy. I was trying to think of a good one, but it's like if you're holding something on a bridge, you can always like kind of put a little bit more on it without it breaking.
Yeah.
Or let's say you're running a pipe from point A to point B, and like I can kind of bend it a little bit without it breaking. And the difficulty is figuring out like how much flexibility there is before the thing breaks or you have a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes this like ship of Theseus situation, right? Where you're like, okay, if I change one board, is it the same ship? If I change two boards, is it the same ship? At what point does it ever become a different ship? Or is it always a different ship the minute you change it,
mm-hmm.
but it bears this slight, you know, resemblance and identity to the original? Yeah, because I mean, I'm already thinking like the tree. Whenever we do the tree, I make the same drink, which is some amaretto. Gozio is my choice.
Is it the one that I don't like?
Is it the one that you don't like? No, I don't think you...
The one that we drank when I was there with Sal.
No. That was gin. That was the gin and Tannenbaum.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's a different one. This one is what have I been calling this? Did I call it White Christmas? I called it something. I don't remember. I came up with a good name. Anyway, it's just amaretto and milk and a little bit of nutmeg or cinnamon, which you wouldn't like. And then Claire will make a drink. And then we put on a record. And we always put on this old Elvis Christmas album.
That's cool.
That was my grandmother's.
Nice.
And that we have in the house now. And that's always the first track is Blue Christmas.
Of course.
Right? And we always put that on. Then we play that. Then we play the Rat Pack. We play the Jackson 5. And like we have this whole list mm-hmm. of Christmas albums. And then now Rosie is more conscious, and so I'm sure new things are going to be introduced to that without disrupting the old parts. And so things can grow, things can slightly change shape, but there's some common thread.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's ultimately what tradition is. It's the common thread as such,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Dr. Kogan used to say this thing to me in a bunch of contexts where he's like, you become a link in an eternal chain, right? And something that has been before you and something that will be there long after you, hopefully, with our longest standing traditions. And for the ones that weren't there before you, I think the idea is that you've created something that will outlast you and impact something, and there's something to that. It's almost like, mm-hmm. I think tradition plays this role in society of, it's the door between you and the void, so to speak.
You and the void?
You and the void.
Not you and the other?
You and the other? I think it's you and the other are on one side of the door, and on the other side of the door is the void. It's the thing you guys do with each other to build on the groundless ground, right? It's the thing that prevents falling into chaos and nihilism, because it's the creation of meaning where there is no meaning intrinsically,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
Or at least, if not the creation, the
perpetuation of meaning.
Something like that, right? And so ontologically, I think that is the purpose it serves. There's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what else is there to it? And like, what are ways it can kind of like veer off? And what are ways we can course correct? But I think generally that's kind of the idea.
So interesting that you say that. So you think that is the creation of new or something new that is the you know, what prevents you from you to falling into the void, or is the keeping what's there that prevents you from falling into the void? Because this
is a good question.
These are two different things, right?
Yep. It depends on if you are starting a tradition or if you're falling into a tradition.
Mm.
And in the case of falling into a tradition, since it predates you, it's something you hold on to. In the case of making one, it's something that wasn't there and then now is there and now you're holding on to. So maybe it's less accurate to say that it has something to do with creating as a solution to the vacuum, and more about there's a subject-dependent activity. And that subject-dependent activity could be either of those things. To get us away from that ostensible conflict that you're talking about.
I'm thinking, so in my head, I was like, in one case, you're the high priest, and the other case, you're God.
Yes, yes.
But it's both about the same issue, right? So either you're starting, and then hopefully it will be somebody who will be the high priest to this thing that you are nursing, right? And the other one instead is like, you're already in this flow, and you are just defending it from...
Yeah.
From... Not necessarily for someone, but from the void, from disappearing, from just being annihilated by non-existence.
By entropy.
Yeah, I think that's actually the right word.
I think you would have to go a little more with the not God one, because in a way, there is a limit to that. Because to play God is to kind of see yourself as more important than things, and that can kind of relate in a hyper novelty, you know, in the other direction. But I think the more important thing about tradition is
being the high priest,
is being in it, right, regardless of whether it started with you or not.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's another question, maybe. But can tradition start?
That's a good question.
Because if it's tradition,
yeah.
And again, I think this might be our language. We use our language wrong. I don't think we can start traditions. I think we can start something and hoping that those things become traditions, or we can modify things that are already in there, make it slightly different and be part of this. There is the tradition that is to make Christmas trees in December, some after Thanksgiving, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when people do it. We usually do it the Sunday after Thanksgiving, I want to say.
Yeah, we do it. We do it the first weekend of December.
Something like that. I don't remember. I don't think there is a... It depends when we're free.
Mm-hmm.
This coming Christmas, if I'm still the chair, it's not... you might do it the night before. Jokes aside, right? So maybe this tradition is this larger than us situation than the squirting of the whipped cream and the Elvis music. There's just variations on the theme. It's like there is the symphony, which is the tradition that we're all keeping alive for whatever reasons mm-hmm. that sometimes we don't even know what they are. And then there is the different conductors that perform that tradition maybe differently.
You raise a good point because...
Less poetic than just being our tradition, but...
Yeah, you know, but I like it. And it kind of reminds me of... So here's where we're going to show a difference in generation. You've seen Mean Girls, right?
No.
Boo from the audience.
My daughter watches it. I've seen on TV, but I don't...
So there's this line, and it's actually a reflection of a deep issue in philosophy of language and other things, where like the one girl keeps saying fetch, and she's like trying to start this new word, and she's like, stop trying to make fetch happen, right? Because you can't just like force a thing voluntarily to happen. And I feel like what you're saying is related to that, where... Mm-hmm. I didn't say, and now I do this thing that will be a tradition. It's like something happens, and then I find myself in a similar place cyclically the following year, and I'm like, you know what? I did this last year, and then I wind up doing it again, and I'm like, I'm gonna do this, right? This becomes a thing for whatever reason. Yeah, no, I think the creation story is interesting because there is a something that seems like almost contradictory about the concept of creating
a tradition.
Right. So sidestepping that issue, it is the preservation of something that is subject dependent.
You know, now I've got into this all. I'm thinking that studying a tradition is like going viral, but with something that goes viral at a certain point and then keeps on coming every year around the same time.
Oh, as opposed to like... And now I am going to go viral.
It's just something that you do and people find it whatever hilarious or interesting and everybody's looking at it. Everybody wants to do it.
Yeah.
And then you kind of force either to do it over and over again or
that's a good point.
It just pops up on the social media every year.
The original happening must be organic, seemingly. It must be,
an accident or something.
Yeah, because it's like an invisible hand almost, right? Like all these different systems.
I don't like them.
You don't like it, but I'm just going to say it. I'll use a better word.
No, you could.
That's it has to be...
Actually, it's a good one.
I'll use a word that has a dirty connotation, but I mean it in the best possible way, genuine or authentic, right? It has to happen naturally, which ultimately relates back to Gadamer. You have to fall in love. You have to fall in a conversation, right?
Yeah.
It has to be perceived... as being bigger than you, or it has to be bigger than you.
Yeah, and there's maybe, and I wonder at this point if we've been talking about this wrong to begin with, is it even possible to have personal, local, extremely local traditions? Or does a tradition becomes a tradition? Is there a threshold where you need a certain amount of subjects to... Actually, they need to get into that because otherwise it's not a tradition.
I don't think so. I don't think a tradition becomes more tradition-like the more people are involved in it. I think it maybe becomes more – I think it becomes quantitatively greater and maybe it appears to have some bigger qualitative weight, but I don't think that it's not like the more the merrier, you know, because the stuff that you do with your family, like that's real. Mm-hmm. That's a tradition. Mm-hmm. And it's a tradition as much as like hiding eggs on Easter. It's just less and more people do them. And I don't want to say like, oh, it's less valuable because it's just your family, because maybe in a certain way that's more valuable to you because that's actually personal and that only exists within your family. So it's even more special versus something that kind of exists on a global scale. I think all you need is a community of some sort.
But at least two people, right?
So we encountered this issue in our holiday episode. Mm-hmm. As you were drinking that drink that you purposely spilled.
I didn't purposely spill it.
And we talked about whether you can have a holiday or a tradition with one person. Mm. And I kind of think we didn't get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, and I think that the holiday ultimately, if I remember correctly, we said something like, well, holidays are decided by multiple people, whatever it is. Well, a tradition might be a little – can I have – and I think it's easier to see – I had the tradition that every time I go to bed, before I go to bed,
You read fiction.
Is that a tradition or is it just a habit?
The difference may lie in why you do it and how it shows up for you in consciousness.
So the meaning aspect to it, because habits have purpose.
They have purpose. They're practical, but whereas traditions seem to be symbolic rather than practical.
They have meaning, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Makes sense. So that, and so that seems to lead, still, there can be a tradition just for one person.
I'm trying to think of it, because all the things I've thought of in my head involve other people. Because even, like, let's say you go to someone's grave every year. That's still a relationship between you and another,
sure.
Even if they're dead. Even if you look at the little friendship bracelet in your...
There's still
that's there. Still you and another, right? I mean, one thing I thought of is, like, maybe let's say every year on your birthday, as you get older, you look at some... Like your baby bracelet, and it like has you reflect.
Or I'm thinking even start something like I do personally every year around this time of year. I do prepare my garden, and the first thing that I need to plant, otherwise I don't plant anything else, are peas.
There you go.
Is that?
That's a good question.
And again, there's no specific reason. I could plant radishes before peas, but to me, it's like in my head, it's like, this is the beginning, right? It's like you put the pea in the...
That's how you do it.
That's how you do it. Yeah. And then the gardening season starts, right, for example.
I mean, in the pea situation, it may not be entirely arbitrary, because if you have it in your mind like, no, this is how you do it, then that's a wedge between you and entropy, because you're like, I'm not going to do it any other way. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm not going to see this as just like I can start with anything at any time. It has to be the P. So there may be something there. I think there's certainly something to the person who looks at their baby bracelet every year.
Of course.
But these kind of limit cases are always hard with like any issue.
Of course.
But I think the core issue is it's kind of this, let's call it, I don't want to call it a, I don't think this is correct. I'm thinking of our walk on hyperobjects, but it's some kind of fourth dimensional thing, right? Where the tradition ties together the past, the present, and the future.
Yeah.
Right? And it's bigger than any individual. It is something that is not in the world in itself, but requires an interaction between subjects in the world in itself. And they do it kind of, they fall into it for one reason or another, and then they preserve it or not. And the idea is that if you lose them, right, so now we can shift into this, there's something, how would you say, tragic about that. There's a loss, let's say.
There's a loss, yes.
Right? If somehow you didn't do the whipped cream thing from a quote-unquote objective standpoint, it's exactly the same minus a few chemical alterations. Like the physics of the situation are basically identical. But this little variation shows up as being quite significant, and its absence would be noticed and might weigh on you. So whatever traditions are, they hold something of value for people.
Absolutely. And not only that, I think that they... As you say, it makes it tragic when they're not there anymore. The disappearance is almost a real loss, like the loss of a person or something like that, because you're missing, and it's not, I think it's normal. You're missing value. You're missing the meaning that you're there, right? Well, you were talking, I was thinking when you were saying, like, you were talking about this hyper-object stuff, and I know we're trying to transition out of it, but I'm thinking that there is a sense when the person looking at the bracelet, but in general, even... In every tradition, there is an element of that has to do with carrying the past back in, right? Back in the present. But it's not about the situation, truly, probably. What we're trying to carry back in the present, it's, this is going to sound strange, probably, but it is ourselves and the people involved within that ritual, the past version of those people. And of ourself into being again, right? And I think that's interesting because we kind of don't want to lose what we wear and we keep on carrying it together. It's not about, because I think that generally speaking, people think of traditions as something that has to do with carrying in the present things that are not anymore, right? And people that are not anymore, things that happen. But I have the feeling that there's something to do also with us as well, like hearing that version of when this thing happened the first time back again. Like the first time that the squirting happened, everybody was happy. We were laughing, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like unexpected. And everybody was running around the house, hiding from me, squirting them with. And the kids were, you know, they thought it was hilarious. Then my wife was like laughing and you know, and yelling at me not to do this to her, right? And I think it's not the moment, but it is the way we felt and the version of ourselves that appeared in that moment that this is what we're trying to recreate there. And that's the meaning, I guess. That's what part of what gives meaning. It's kind of, and this is the sense in which I say is conservative also and partially reactionary too, right? You're reacting to the loss of yourself.
In some sense, it's a drive towards immortality.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
In some sense, it is either a reaction to or a means of...
conservation?
I was going to say pushing away anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Also,
because
sure.
I think of Freud, Mourning and Melancholia, is that mm-hmm. correct? / Kierkegaard, the idea of loss of the loved object.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like with tradition, what you're doing
mm-hmm.
is making sure that you don't
mm-hmm.
lose it completely. Even if
correct.
You've lost it in a physical sense,
mm-hmm.
that it's non-repeatable, you repeat... how would yeah. you say, the dance of your mind and yeah. the body is involved.
Absolutely.
And Chulhan says that the repetition... So he actually has a really interesting view on this, which is that rituals can only happen with things and people in the world because when they're out in the world apart from you, they're other. And when you have these repeated encounters with the other, they get elevated to the level... of permanence.
Mm.
And permanence is the exact opposite of contingency and fragility.
Mm-hmm.
And Sartre talks about anxiety as being the result of this encounter with negation and
mm-hmm.
fragility. And so it's almost like rituals, tradition allows us to transcend that contingency into something permanent.
But fragile at the same time.
Yes.
Truly permanent.
Yes, but it is, let's say, phenomenologically permanent, and it's only in the permanent that we could, quote-unquote, be at home. You find home in that.
Interesting that you said phenomenologically permanent, because in my head I was thinking normatively permanent.
Mm. Well, certainly it... We should act as if it is.
Right?
Technically, you're a bag of chemicals and water right now, but I don't act
right.
as if you are and stab you because I assume you're some end in yourself that's permanent.
Yeah, it's funny. It's it's just the different words that we were using just made me think. I'm also thinking. I think that there is an implication within tradition. And, you know, I guess we got to figure out how much we want to dig in this. There's an element of... Let me rephrase already.
Okay. Choosing his words carefully.
Yes. I think there is an... Some people might say that there is an element of... There might be an element of violence within tradition that's carried by the fact that it's exclusionary.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's exclusionary and because people might have different traditions, this might lead to some sort of conflict.
Sure.
A sometimes violent conflict. And I think that some people will say that because of that, traditions are bad.
Hmm.
Right?
Sure.
And I guess my question is, are traditions bad because of that?
The short answer... No.
Yes,
That's a very glib response. If we're going to play hard and fast with that term violence and say that it's intrinsically violent because it is exclusionary of the new, then we would also have to say it logically follows that the new is violent insofar as it destroys the non-new.
Well, that wasn't the kind of, that might be possible. That's not the kind of violence I was thinking of, though. I was thinking about the conflict and the violence that one tradition might do to another. Not the new.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the two versions.
Oh, intertraditionally.
Yes. Not the, that's the one that's interesting to me.
So between two religions, for example.
Yeah, I don't care much for the new old stuff because the tension is always going to be there. It's normal. This is how new traditions are born. How old one died out. That's that's Hegel, right? Dialectical.
Yeah,
the way it works. But the in-between stuff, like the intertraditional kind of violence or conflict. That's the one that it's interesting to me, right? Because we don't like the idea that everything is the same, right? Everybody can do whatever they want, like the R word that you like.
Mm-hmm.
Relativism, just clarify. It's been a while. It's been a while, right?
Someone's like, what did he say?
So on one side, there's that thing that we don't like, neither me or you. But on the other side, there's the fact that if not everybody can be right, and not everything can happen at the same time, then there's going to be conflict.
Absolutely. I would say that's true. And I would say that is the price you pay for something that is ontologically and culturally necessary. Because think about the alternative.
Right?
The alternative is we are one.
Yes. So totalitarianism?
Either, so it's two sides of the same coin, which is either extreme totalitarianism or extreme atomism.
So fragmentation or, okay, or either Parmenides or complete destruction.
Yeah, something like that. And I'm thinking that the collection of multiple traditions is kind of a way of preserving the best while avoiding the worst, because I'm thinking it in terms of the Kantian categorical stages of like unity, plurality, totality, right? Mm-hmm. So like you have a unity or you have an infinite collective or you have sets of things, right? And there's like sets of total entities. There's like this tradition and this tradition and this tradition, and they're each one, but as a whole, they're many. But there's not like one thing from the top down. I mean, because let's play with this idea you have, right, where it's bad because it creates conflict because there's always going to be an out-group, right? And if there's A and B, B is an out-group relative to A, A is an out-group relative to B, unavoidable. Absolutely unavoidable.
Is there... I guess this position leads to, are there any undesirable traditions, or the fact that the tradition exists means that it is desirable and we should kind of leave it alone?
So I think so far...
As much as it doesn't, whatever, interfere with our tradition, maybe.
Yeah. So far we've been just talking about tradition as such. In a formal sense, right? And then so I guess we get into the conversation now of like specifics in terms of content and like on what grounds could we evaluate different traditions and what tools do we use when evaluating and at what point do we quote unquote do something about it to try and eradicate some tradition if that's justified or something. Because you could have a tradition that's like, yeah, you know, once a year we get five children together and we torture them and then we light them on fire in front of the community. And you're like, oh my God, that's a bad tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing all the things formally correct, but it's like the way they chose to implement that form was, you know, not the greatest.
And that is, would you say that is independent of the meaning that the tradition holds? Because that's the issue, right? So there might be some traditions that really, really, really look terrible, right?
Of course.
But at the same time, maybe that's what's holding that society together. That's what's holding, like, the community together. What do you do then, right? You just dissolve the community? Or is it? And I guess the original question is, like, what does it mean that there's when are traditions bad? Because if the goal, and I talk about this all the time when we talk about companies, right? You have students or sometimes people that would say that, you know, corporate is bad, right? Every corporation is evil. And my rebuttal to this is like, no. Evil corporations don't exist because evil corporations are bad corporations that perish. Because evil is a relative term to what the goal, Aristotle, right? Mm. What the purpose of the thing is. If by evil you mean that there are corporations that all they care for is making money, they're not evil. They're functioning the way they're built.
They're like teleologically correct.
Yeah, that's what they're supposed to do now. And if the tradition, if traditions, teleological, this tradition teleology is actually to preserve and to, I don't know, energize or keep together, whatever we want to think of, a specific community, then unless the tradition is not doing that, there is no such thing as a bad tradition.
Because all traditions are equally tradition-like, as we said earlier.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing you're saying is like the general question of ethics, right? Just applied to the tradition issue, which is like, well, what criteria are we using? Because it's like Thrasymachus, like every system is good to the system, right? And preserves itself. Yeah. It has like a, what's the word you use? It's like a closed loop. What do you use to say this? Like when you're talking about psychoanalysis and all the ideological lenses.
They're ideologies.
There's a specific thing you say that I can't remember though.
Okay, I don't know.
But I think this is the question, right?
And, you know, maybe the answer is there's no such thing that a bad tradition.
Hmm.
I don't know if you want to swallow that pill though.
No, I won't swallow that one. There definitely, I would say, are bad traditions.
There are, you're saying.
Sure, because a tradition is just a manifestation of like social practices, right? And if we're saying there's bad social practices, it would have to follow that they're bad traditions, which depending on our ethical lens and application will show up different ways.
Interesting, because that's a disagreement that I didn't think we will have.
What do you think?
Because I don't think that, again, I don't think there are bad traditions.
I don't think there are bad traditions teleologically. But I think there are bad traditions morally.
I think there are traditions that we don't like for whatever reasons. That also depends on the tradition. We might not like it for one reason or another. But I don't think that qualifies the tradition as wrong. I'm trying to play the relativist here, the opposite, actually. I think that, okay, if we accept the traditions, are those things that do what we think, what we have been saying they do? I don't know. How? How can there be a bad tradition? There might be a tradition that doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But if the tradition is, as you say, this thread that's carrying, that, I mean, unless you're saying that you want to kill everything that was before, right? You want to get...
Because then it's contradictory in like a Kantian sense. Yeah.
You want to get rid of that. That's... You know.
Yeah, so I guess the metric you would use to call it bad would have to be found outside of the tradition, right? Because like within it, it has this internal coherence. So you would say it is bad not insofar as it is a tradition, but bad insofar as it involves acts which we find for one reason or another morally unacceptable.
That might be different, yes. So you can tell me that, you know, this tradition and what they do in that tradition, I might be like, I don't, can we find a different way?
Can we find a different one? Yeah.
Oh, but even that might be arbitrary, I don't know.
And this is, I think this is actually the problem that, to go back to the earlier point in our conversation to kind of launch us into the thing we'll do in the second half is, the whole issue people have with traditional things is that they say this exact thing. Hey, it works as a tradition. Mm-hmm. It has internal coherence. Mm-hmm. but like maybe we shouldn't have that because there are new ways of thinking that challenge these things. Mm-hmm. And the tradition, it is a chain. It is an eternal chain, but it's shackling my freedom. So we have to like escape from this thing. And then so we have this fleeing from, I guess, the constraints. And
which I'm super surprised it's your position, kind of.
Is it my position? I'm accurately representing the state of affairs in the world.
No, I'm saying you were the one saying that there are not good traditions, right, for one reason or another, which I think it aligns with that way of thinking more than what I'm saying, that there's no such thing as a bad tradition.
Yeah, I think that...
Which surprises me.
I don't think it's surprising because I think we're just playing a different
game,
language game, to use a phrase. My turn at doing the thing, because I think we actually mean the same thing.
It's possible,
right? And the way we mean the same thing, I know, is because I go, think of all the different cultures around the world and the different traditional practices that exist. Do we think they're all equally acceptable? No. Right, so that's how I know we agree. We're just like getting at it through different
gotcha.
Conceptual systems.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think something that maybe you know we can kind of end on is tying together these characteristics of tradition and seeing how in the next episode especially novelty takes us away from this and mm-hmm. to try and get into when that's a good thing. When, if at all, it becomes an excess, and like, how do we navigate that ongoing struggle, let's say, between preserving what is previous and embracing what has not happened yet?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the next episode, this relationship between tradition and novelty might be interesting to explore, because I'm thinking Aristotle, right?
Oh,
excess
yeah.
of things are mm-hmm. always bad. Mm-hmm. And excess of tradition might now be an exception to that.
Yeah, and it's tough because what do we do in response to it? Like, I know something, and I guess we can end with this, that Chulhan talks about not only in the disappearance of ritual, I think he talks about it in his work on aesthetics too, is this idea that when you interact with symbols, things have this enchantment to them, right? Like there's this enticing signifier or mm-hmm. exterior that he talks about that lures you in. It's like a, I don't want to say a true erotic because he uses that word in like a very specific way, right? But there's something entrancing about it. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that if you remove that always, like all the time, everything loses its magic. Yep. Everything loses its significance, and you're left with the stark signified that's just staring at you as objective information.
Mm-hmm. Which is scary sometimes.
Which is quite scary sometimes, and he thinks that's where the technological age is putting us.
He might be right about that one.
So we'll see. We'll talk.
Or maybe completely wrong. I don't know.
Or maybe. Da, da, da.
We'll see you at 1:15.
We'll see you.